we use with our clients this process we call the Why Connection, which is a tool that we use to help people understand what drives them. Why do they do what they do? How do they internally process information, or how do they bring that why to life? And then what do they ultimately bring to the world?
You're listening to the Woman of Value podcast. You are about to hear the story of a woman who is following her dreams and passions and creating positive change in the world. My guest today is Sonia Shelton. She's the CEO and founder of Executive Leadership Consulting, ELC, and she's also the author of the number one best-selling book, You're an Executive, But Are You a Leader? Good question. She and her team work with executives and business owners to create growth with their proven red thread leadership model. She's an international speaker, a coach, and a consultant, and she has worked with senior executives at companies all around the world, from startups to Fortune 100 corporations, including Disney, Nestle, and Microsoft. She's a certified master corporate executive coach and a member of the Forbes Coaches Council. Welcome to the show, Sonia.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited about our conversation today.
Me too. I love the topic of leadership and what makes a leader. But first, let's start with your definition of woman of value.
So I think a woman of value is a woman, to be honest, right? So anybody, every person has value. You might not have connected with it yet. You might not have recognized it or accepted it yet. You might not be authentically you. And so it feels like it's not value, but I don't think that there is a woman on the face of the planet or who has ever lived that does not bring value.
I love that. I think we don't always see our value. And it's so important to understand that we are probably living beneath the value that we can bring to the world, which brings me to my next question, which is, when did you start to discover your own value? What are some of those pivotal moments?
I had challenges where I had to really test my own power, my own strength, my own conviction. But I think the most impactful, we use with our clients this process we call the Why Connection, which is a tool that we use to help people understand what drives them. Why do they do what they do? How do they internally process information, or how do they bring that why to life? And then what do they ultimately bring to the world? And when I went through that process, I had why I bring it to my clients now is I had this big aha moment of why I do what I do is to partner with others to have a bigger impact. And you know, other people who are coaches might say, well, every coach would say that, but not necessarily, right? Because it helps me make decisions about, am I working with a client? If that client doesn't want to change, I can't make an impact. And so I fire the client. And then I've worked with teams where I just had this happen recently, where I'm working with a team over a series of sessions, right? And after the first session, I came to the second session and I said, so what changed since the last time that we were together? And they all sort of just looked at me and were quiet. And I said, well, if nothing's changed, why am I here? I said, because I don't want to be wasting my time if I'm not going to make an impact. That's why I do what I do. And if I'm not doing that, then I'm not going to be fulfilled. So, and it really shifted them. I don't think that they'd ever had that happen before, where they had, you know, somebody working with them kind of say, well, if you're not going to change, then I don't want to be here. Right. And so it really has helped me step into my courage and recognize that I do have value that I bring. And if I'm not bringing that value, I don't need to be in that room. I have other people that I can impact and have impact with if I'm not that person for them.
I love that, because it took me a long time to realize that I could not work with everyone. It wasn't a good fit. And now I help my clients to do the same thing, because if you're working with somebody who is not
not kind, not respectful, not open to growth. All of those things are essential for anything to work in coaching. And there are going to be people who are so appreciative and will just make incredible progress. And then the people who really are not open and can't see their part in it are just not going to be good clients. But let's go back to you, and because this is who you are today, you're able to set those boundaries, you know your value, you know the impact you want to make. But I'm sure you weren't always that way. So take us back to a time when you didn't know with the same clarity who you were.
Yeah, so I used to be an executive for the Walt Disney Company. I was the head of internal communications globally. And I had a boss who I learned later through my coaching education would be defined as an emotional terrorist, somebody who has really strong EQ and uses it to hurt people. And I didn't know that any such person existed, but he really had this way. And I really appreciate that I had him as a boss, because it helped me learn about myself and connect to my own value, and where he had this way of putting me down and have it be for my own good, right? So that it completely had me convinced that he was on my side, really wanted me to be successful. But then at the same time, bringing in these messages of that I wasn't good enough, or, you know, areas where he didn't think that I was successful, and really having me second guess myself. And it was, it took me a while to recover from it, but I realized after the fact, after I left the company, I realized how much I had given my power away as a result of that, and not really stood in the impact that I can have, and not trusting myself, and sort of saying, well, because he was my boss, he knew better, and I didn't know, and even about my own value and what I could bring to the table.
And I'm sure so many people listening are going to relate to this story, unfortunately, because there are a lot of people like that out there who can gaslight you, who can make you think you're the problem, and they're doing it for your own good. It's almost like an abusive parent who will punish you, but say, you know, it's because I love you so much that I'm going to make you do all these terrible things. And it's so destructive, and it can take a major hit on your self-esteem. And so luckily you were able to recover. Like, how did you recover? How did you figure out that I'm not the problem?
Yeah, it was an aha moment that I had with a friend of mine who didn't work for the company. And I had a 360 review as a leader to get feedback from the people that reported to me, my peers, my boss. And what came out of that was that the feedback I got was that I was too calm, and that they felt that my peers thought that I lacked passion because I was too calm. And so they got me an executive coach, and that was my first exposure to executive coaching. And the executive coach was chosen for me because I practice Zen meditation, and this coach practiced Zen meditation, and they thought maybe he would understand how to fix my calmness. And I was talking to a friend of mine about it, and he works in the same field, and I was explaining like everything that happened, and now I'm getting this coach. He's like, I just want to pause for a moment and clarify that you're calm, and that's a bad thing. And it was like it was like water, cold water in my face, right? Where it was like, oh, yeah, that's kind of messed up, right? right. And it was, I think that was when I started to wake up, that it was like, oh, something's happening to me. And I'm buying into these, how other people are defining me as truth, right? And even if it's true, like being calm, because I am, even if that is true, that part of me is not acceptable, right? And that I need to show up differently or be somebody different, right? And it really started to shift how I was looking at my environment and the environment I was in. Also, you know, a lot of my experiences there helped me with my clients now, right? To say, you know, I have tremendous empathy, like you were saying, for people who have been through situations like that or are going through situations like that, and how can they connect to who they authentically are and say, no, that's not okay to treat me that way. It's not, to question some of the things that are being said about them, and at the same time, be open to feedback that can help them grow.
Yeah, knowing which feedback is feedback that you actually will grow from and which feedback is destructive. That takes,
right.
That takes some practice. And the other thing that came to mind while you were talking is that so many people who are uncomfortable with parts of us will make those parts wrong. So whether it's being calm or being too sensitive, being too loud, whatever it is, it doesn't make the other person feel good, but that doesn't make you wrong. And I think it takes a lot to just own the fact that this is our superpower. The fact that you're calm is something that so many people would love to have. You know, why is that a problem? But I do think, you know, coming back to being a woman, that we can get misunderstood and read incorrectly if we are not loud and in your face. But if we're too loud, then we're too aggressive and we're too bitchy. And so finding that balance, and I was coaching somebody yesterday, and she said she struggles with boundary setting at work, and she deals with people who are very aggressive, and she's afraid to be seen as this overbearing woman. So she'll set a boundary, but then she'll feel bad about it. And sometimes her boundaries are a little bit flimsy instead of really firm. And I said to her that when you set really clear boundaries, even preemptive boundaries, like, are they filling out forms before they even get a call, you know, with you? Are you getting the information you need so you're not tire kick, you know, you're not dealing with tire kickers? Are you telling them your standards before you even talk, how you communicate, do you email back on the weekends? Like, these are things that people abuse unless you're super clear from the beginning. And just like you said, if somebody isn't a good client, then you fire them. And so I said, I think people will respect you more if you set up boundaries earlier and you're really clear, not mean, but clear. Mm-hmm. I'd love to hear your take on women and boundaries and how we're perceived.
It's interesting because I think sometimes we look at how other people set boundaries and think if they're aggressive in how they set boundaries, that we have to be that way. Or on the flip side, that we have to be pleasing and that we can't make waves and we have to make other people feel comfortable. And I can think of two stories that happened to me. One was I had a colleague who was unhappy with something that I had done, and she started screaming at me, like literally screaming at me. And I couldn't say anything. I couldn't get a word in, right? She was just I put up my hand and I said, I think we should have this conversation later. And I turned around and I walked out of her office, and I didn't take it. And I didn't try to defend myself. This isn't a good situation. So I'm out. Right. But I didn't just freak out and leave. I said, you know, this isn't a good time. Let's talk later. And she was screaming at me down the hallway, continuing to scream at me down the hallway to come back. And I didn't, I just kept going. And I think we teach people how to treat us. Right. So if, you know, I could have stood there and taken it, or I could have fought back and tried to defend myself. But I, you know, when I looked at the situation, I was like, there's nothing I can do here that's going to make this a positive outcome. Right. I was like, 'cause she's all riled up. Right. So I just stopped the situation. And I think and I see this happen in organizations a lot, where, again, you know, the boss that I was mentioning earlier, we were having a hard time making a decision about something on a project that I was in charge of as his team, right? So I said, you know, at our leadership team meeting, I want to talk about this. And in the meeting, I want to make the decision so that when we leave the meeting, we have it because it's taking too long, right? So he gave me time in the meeting and I got everybody's suggestions. And at the end, we had made a decision and I literally went around the room. You're good with this. You're good with this. Like every single person had to say that they were okay and they were committed. It wasn't an hour later that he called me back into his office saying, well, you know, some of the people came back to me and they're thinking maybe we should revisit this. And I was like, nope. I just didn't matter. At that point, I was like, it doesn't matter that you're my boss. We made a decision. They're professionals. They're executives in this company. We made the decision. Everybody said, I commit to this. This is what we're doing. And if they didn't feel comfortable continuing the conversation or expressing their concerns, that's on them, right? And I think he was a bit shocked that I did that, and so were my peers. But you know, I wasn't mean about it, and I wasn't harsh. I was just, you know, very matter of fact of this is the situation, and these are the standards that we have as how we show up as leaders, right? And so I think it's maybe we feel uncomfortable about setting boundaries because we feel like, oh, I might hurt that person's feelings, or you know, I have to be aggressive as they are to be able to meet them for them to hear me. But we don't. We can just be very, you know, very matter of fact. This is my standard, or this is our standard. If we're talking about a team, and I'm just upholding that standard. That's all, right? Sometimes people don't take it well, like the first person I talked about who was yelling at me. But that's okay. Like, I didn't have to be fazed by that.
No. And I think in both cases, you handled it with grace. And I think that people have a bad idea about boundaries, that they seem like they're harsh and they seem like they're demands, but that's not actually a boundary. That is a command. And a boundary is not a wall. It's to protect the things that matter, which brings us back to what you said at the beginning, knowing the why, knowing what you stand for. Because if you know that these things are really important, you're going to want to protect them and not open up that boundary and say, well, you know, okay, I'm going to listen to everybody and now I'm going to change the boundary a little bit. And then it's going to become another inch and another inch until you're so far away from your vision and your mission that you no longer are true to yourself. And that's not okay for anybody.
Yes, absolutely. And I think it doesn't matter. I think if you're a business owner, your clients can take you down that road. If you're somebody who works in an organization, your peers, the people that work for you and your direct reports, or your boss can take you down that road, right? It's like, where are you losing your center and standing in who you are and your personal values? To make other people comfortable or to let them have their way.
Yeah. And it's true of interpersonal relationships as well. Like in my role as a dating coach, if you don't know your standards and you don't uphold your standards, you will get whatever you get. And it won't be what you really want in the end. It'll be you inauthentic and selling yourself short. So important to know who you are, know what you stand for, and then set those boundaries to protect the things that matter.
If you have ever played small to make other people feel comfortable, or maybe stayed in a bad relationship or job too long because you didn't think you could do any better, I wrote a book for you. It's called Becoming a Woman of Value: How to Thrive in Life and Love. Each of the 30 chapters contains a life lesson, a story, and an exercise to bring you closer to reaching your full potential. Becoming a Woman of Value is available on Amazon in paperback and Kindle.
So take us to the present. Take us to your company. Tell us a little bit about how you started, what you do.
So I started because I recognized the importance of culture in organizations. So in my experience at Disney, I had the best of the best. Disney's known for having tremendous culture. And I worked there at a time when it was, but I also worked there at a time when it wasn't. So as the head of internal communications, we went through a shareholder revolt where a member of the Disney family led a shareholder revolt against our CEO to get him fired. And it was like a company going through a divorce, and it wasn't a great culture during that time. And I noticed the impact on me and how I showed up as a leader, and sort of taking the pressure that was on me and transferring that to my team, as well as, you know, kind of seeing what was happening in the organization as we were going through that. And on the other side, I recognized seeing those two opposites, right? Like a great culture and a terrible culture in the same company, and really made me recognize the power of it. And also that it can be something that can drive a business forward, right? When you have people who are passionate about the company and passionate about their role in fulfilling the purpose and the vision of the company, it could be an amazing place to work. It can create exponential profits, right? And revenue growth, if you have them working together, right? So that you have the business strategy and the vision in alignment with what kind of culture you're trying to create, it can really have a lot of power. And so that's why I created Executive Leadership Consulting. And we help companies with first understanding their purpose. What is their purpose? And then how do they connect that purpose to everything they do, from their plan to their processes to their structure and then ultimately to their culture?
Yeah, I think a lot of companies lose their way. And my son used to work for Apple, and they had such a strong mission statement. They had all memorized the mission statement to the Lord Steve Jobs. And it was interesting because their vision was in the stores that everybody knows how to do everything, kind of. And the same people who are kind of not the genius bar people, but the people who are working at the door, the people who clean up, the people who sell, should all be doing the same jobs and not getting paid anymore if you're taking on more managerial roles. And there was supposed to be this culture of equality and cohesiveness, I guess. And what it created was a lot of confusion because the managers weren't really managers. The people weren't really getting compensated for doing extra work. And it was a very confusing environment, but it started with a mission that made sense then. And so I think companies also need to take a look at what happens on the ground. Even though their mission sounds great on paper and maybe it worked for a while, but things change. So how do you help companies that start with a mission, think they know what they want, but with the culture changing, they're not yet caught up?
Yeah, I think it's starting with a place of service, right? So that no matter what kind of company it is, they're doing some kind of service in the world, whether that's through the product that they offer, or if they are a service-based business. And I learned this from a client that I worked with in China, where he had his organization chart was upside down. So he had a hotel and three restaurants. And so his organization chart had guests at the top, and then the people who work like face to face with the guests, right? So front desk, servers, that type, they were next. And then he was at the bottom. And I loved that because he was like, everything that we do is in service of our guests. So when we lose sight of that, then we're not providing the best service. And if I think that I know what the guest needs when I'm not face to face with the guest every day, then that's my ego, right? Like then I really don't, because it's the people who are with them every day who know the questions that they're getting asked. What are the processes? And I was just talking about this yesterday, where I've as a customer left companies never to come back because of that, right? Where I can see exactly, I've been in an Apple store and I've experienced that where you ask somebody a question and they're not really sure, and then they'd have to go get somebody else and they're not really sure, so they don't have their process of how things work, right? Mm-hmm. I'm still a fan of Apple, but but I've had other companies where I can see where the process is breaking down because of the work that I do, but they don't care, and so I'm out, right? I'm not going to give you my money anymore, right? So I think it is, you know, something that companies look at and understanding that purpose isn't about what you think is best. That purpose is, what is it that you're delivering, right? What is that person who is on the other side of the transaction, wanting, paying for, what's the result they're getting? What's that impact for them? That's your purpose, right? And so a lot of people and a lot of companies make these, you know, vision statements and mission statements that are just really say nothing. You know, they have nice flowery words, but they don't really mean anything, even if everyone has it memorized. So that's where we really work with companies on purpose first to say, let's make this something people get passionate about. If you can't get passionate about your purpose as a leader, then your team's not going to get too passionate about it. And no one else in the organization's not going to get passionate about it, right? So you have to do the work to make that really clear.
Yeah. And I've also seen where when you have the upside down, where the executives are at the top and money is at the top. And so making money versus valuing people, and both are important, of course. But when somebody feels like they're replaceable because they're not really valued as a person, that's where a lot of companies fall apart. And I've seen this in some clients of mine where they work really hard. They were promised something at the end of the year. You're going to have a year-end review and you're going to get this big bonus. And then they say, well, I'm not sure if we really can get you that bonus. We'll have to see. And they're like, what? That's not what you promised me. I worked really hard for this. And now I'm not motivated anymore because I just got you all this money. And what's in it for me? And so when the people are not being valued is an issue, but also when the companies are not being consistent with their mission. And so I run a big Facebook group, and it's not a company, but I have very strict guidelines in my Facebook group. I've spoken about it before on the podcast. It's for women who are dating. And because so many dating groups for women are run terribly or not run at all, and what happens is it's like a free-for-all, and it ends up being a horrible environment where it's just a lot of complaints, I decided that I would do it very differently. And I have very, very strict guidelines. They're all about kindness and how we give support and not advice, and how we don't tell people to run and call people names that we don't know. And other groups don't do that. And it's simple, but if you don't follow the rules and you push back, you're out. And so I keep the group clean and running smoothly and very positive because of that. And I have people helping me run the group as well. But it's sort of a mini corporation, you know, where I know the mission that I want. I want people to learn these skills and to treat each other the way they want to be treated and how they would take these skills out in the real world. And it's had an incredible impact on people for no money at all, you know, but I love seeing the changes that happen. And it's such a simple thing to do, but it takes thought and it takes effort to keep it going and not just ignore the things that you put down.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things that I tell my clients is that clarity polarizes, and that's okay, right? So when the clearer you are about what it is that you want to do as an organization, what you stand for, what your purpose is, what that vision of where you want to take it, what's acceptable and not acceptable, the more people know if they are in or they're out. And if they're out, that's okay. Let's let them go find something else that fulfills them in a better place that where they can, that they really connect with that purpose of that company, or it's more in alignment with who they are. And so sometimes people feel like, oh, well, if we're not including them, if they do feel like they don't belong anymore when we're changing the culture, that's a bad thing. And it's not, right? Because we don't want somebody staying in a job or with a company where they're unhappy. They're not going to be as productive. It's not good for the person who's staying, and it's not good for the company, right? And it's not good for the people they work with.
Yeah. You shouldn't be everything to everybody, but I love that clarity polarizes. I think about Shark Tank a lot and how clear they are. It's not going to work. It's like, right. I'm out. And I think we should all be that clear. Like, this is not a good fit. I'm out, you know. So take us to the future, Sonia, and tell us what your vision is for the future.
I believe that we are shifting in in companies today, in business today, where I think there's a couple of factors that I see across all of the companies that we work with that are common. And one of them is uncertainty, right? We're in a time where there's a lot of uncertainty. I remember when I first started consulting, we had, you know, 5-year plans, 20-year visions, and we could make those happen, right? We could, it was very predictable. We're not there anymore. And so it's making businesses uncomfortable that they can't predict what's going to happen and that things are uncertain. And when the leaders are uncomfortable with uncertainty, then the rest of the team is going to be uncomfortable with uncertainty. And then this other factor that's happening is the speed of change, where technology is allowing us to do things faster. Think about even just the past 3 years, all the things that have changed, and that's going to continue to speed up, right? So those two factors together can lead to burnout when people are feeling like they're just doing a lot of activity, but they don't really know where they're going. But I also think that I'm very inspired by the younger generations who are really purpose-driven. And they're not just purpose-driven about where they want to work, but they're purpose-driven in how they buy. So they will make a purchasing decision based on a company's purpose much more often than somebody from an older generation would. So I think in the future, my vision for that is really to help companies see the power of purpose. I think that these younger generations are going to help in that vision, and they're going to have to shift and be more purpose-driven. And then I see this ripple effect where when a company is focused on purpose, people can get passionate about that purpose and connect their own personal passion and their why to that purpose of the company. Changes how people work, right? I think that there's this aura, if you will, around work that it's drudgery, right? That you know, even some of the language that we use, like golden handcuffs, and you know, like things like that, where it doesn't sound exciting, it doesn't sound fun, and it can be it doesn't mean that we don't have challenges, but we're excited about those challenges. And because we can see what's on the other side, we're so passionate about what we're doing, we want to break through those challenges and make the company successful. And so my vision is that we have more of those companies around, and that and shine as an example for other companies to step into that. And what happens is when somebody is really fulfilled at work and loves what they do and they're passionate, when they go home, it's a very different environment. Right. When somebody doesn't like their job, and I experienced this myself, right? When somebody doesn't like their job or they're unhappy and they go home, that transfers to their family, which transfers to their neighborhood, right? It's like this ripple effect that happens. Whereas if somebody is excited about what they do and they're fulfilled, they have much more energy when they come home, and that transfers to their family and that transfers to their neighborhood. And I just see there's so much power in changing organizations. And that's why I do what I do, is because I think that's, there's so much power, spend so much of our day at work, right? So much power in making that a good place to be able to have that ripple effect out into other areas of our life too.
Yeah, that's great to be able to see the ripple in both directions. And having been working in my own passionate careers for most of my life, it's hard to even imagine going back to working for somebody who, very similar to your boss that you talked about at Disney. I had a boss, probably my last job, where he basically did some of that with me. It was a graphic design company, and I had a background in art, and I found it really boring. It was boring to me because I was really not a graphic designer as much as a creative artist. And he gave me some projects that involved multimedia, like doing sound and slideshows back in the day. And that was exciting, but the rest of the work was formulaic and boring. And basically he threatened me and said, you know, you'll never find as good a job as this, and this is as good as it gets. And it's kind of like when you're in a bad relationship and you'll never find a partner as good as me. And it was so freeing when I left. And it was when I got married and my husband said, you're so talented in art and you're not using your talents staying in this place, just quit and we'll travel together and go do, you know, write that children's book and do the things you love. And it really got me out of that rut of I have to stay because I have to make money and pay my bills. And yeah, you do have to pay your bills and make money, but you can eventually find that thing that lights you up. And we do spend our whole lives working. And what a difference it makes when you feel like you're making a difference in the world and you're making an impact and you're doing something that you're meant to do. All right, we're transitioning into the lightning round. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Fill in the blank. I used to think I wasn't blank enough.
I used to think that I wasn't successful enough. I think that I've spent, I was younger, a lot of energy, time listening to other people and comparing myself to other people. And now I recognize that my journey is my journey, right? And there's certain things I want in life and certain things I don't want in life. And everyone's definition of success is an individual definition. It's not a society definition.
I like that. People often ask me, how successful are you at your career? You know, how many people do you help? And I always say, how do you define success? Because I think everyone is successful that I work with. It's just, if you think the only end goal is X, then it's going to be a different number, but that's not success to me. So yes, yes to that. What was the number one thing holding you back from becoming a woman of value?
I think it was not fear of judgment, right? I think there's a lot of things throughout my life that I didn't do because I was afraid of being criticized shamed, right? And what I recognized, I would say since I started ELC, putting myself out here on things like this, like podcasts and things like that, doing videos on social media, that I sometimes get hate comments. I do, right? And I can decide that that defines me or that I shouldn't do that anymore because I don't want to get that. Or I can just recognize that I'm not for everyone. And those aren't people that are hearing the message coming from me. Maybe they'll hear it coming from someone else in the future, right? But they're not hearing it coming from me. And that's okay. That doesn't define me. But I think I spent some time holding myself back because I was afraid of what other people would say.
Yeah. And it can be brutal out there. If yes. You're putting yourself out there, there's stuff that's going to come back, and it takes courage to share your voice, to be in front of a camera on a mic. And yeah, you don't take it all in, but it does take a lot to develop that thick skin. Next question. What is the best advice you can give to a woman who wants to become more empowered?
Discover your superpower and be you. Like, really use it. And I think it's looking at, you know, what drives you, that why that I talked about earlier, you know, finding that out and then really recognizing the value of it and how you bring that uniquely. No one else can bring that. That's your superpower. And each of us has one individually. And maybe, well, I would say quite often, especially women get criticized or tried to be like made small, like you were talking about earlier, because of their superpower. And sometimes our superpowers come along with challenges, right? Like I say, that you have your superpower and you have your kryptonite part of it, right? Right. But it's if you recognize that, you know, it has its positives and it has its challenges. And recognizing how to mitigate the challenges as much as possible without dimming the light on that superpower, right? And that whoever you are listening to this, you have it. You might not know it yet, but you have it.
Good message. What advice would you give to your younger self?
I would tell my younger self to trust myself more often. I think that one of my gifts is that I have a long vision horizon, right? I can see trends. I tend to be ahead of the curve on a lot of things that I understand, or that I can see what needs to change, or things like that. And then it seems to be about 10 years where I've had things that I get into, and then 10 years later, everybody's into that. And the people that knew that I was into that before are like, well, you're going to go back? Like, no, I'm not. Like, why would I go back? Right. So I think it's trusting myself and that knowing and recognizing that that's a gift, and being able to leverage it more.
It's a great gift. What is something that people often get wrong about you?
Yeah, I mentioned earlier that I'm calm, but I also have a great adventurous spirit. And so people are often shocked by some of my interests because I come across as, you know, more conservative, which I'm not really not. So, you know, I love rock and roll music. I love Formula One racing. And I'll say something to somebody about, you know, a concert I go to or watching a Formula One race. And they're like, you're interested in that? It's like, oh yeah, right. So I think sometimes because of my demeanor, they don't always see that I actually do have an adventurous spirit at my core.
I love finding out those layers of people. And it's interesting. I dated a guy about a year and a half ago for a brief time, but we stayed friends, which doesn't usually happen. But he was a very special person, and we have a lot of things in common. So we do things together. And we've been taking the train into Manhattan together to attend these events. And on the train, it's about an hour, we have these long conversations, and we have talked about all the different parts of us that we didn't know a year and a half ago. And so one conversation could be about drug use when we were younger. And I was shocked to hear about his experiences, and because he's very conservative looking. And so I love hearing the other layers, because we're all not just one note, and people often see us as, you know, just this type of person. So it's cool that you have all these other sides. And finally, Sonia, how would you like to be remembered?
I would like to be remembered as having had an impact for people to step into their own empowerment and to see what was possible for them. So if any time that I am able to work with somebody to see that they have a choice, whether that's, you know, in the work that I do with friends, you know, a conversation with somebody that I just met, to where I can see what's possible for them, or that they can step into their own empowerment and make different decisions and change their life. That's how I want to be remembered, is somebody who helps people do that.
That's a beautiful thing, and you're doing it now. And it really resonates for me, because that's so much a part of what drives me. And so I obviously, woman of value, empowerment is all connected. And I think it's wonderful that you're doing this work. Can you share with us a link where people can find you?
Yes, absolutely. So I think the best place to reach me is executiveleader.com, which is the executive leadership consulting website. We have lots of free resources on there about leadership. If you're interested in the book, there's a link to that. If you're interested in discovering your why, you can find out how to do that on the website. All the social media is there. You can also reach out to me if you want to send me a note about questions that you have that you heard about from the podcast or anything like that.
Well, I thoroughly enjoyed this conversation, and I can think of a few people who I could send to you who are looking for that next chapter and trying to figure out what they want after leaving the corporate world, which has sucked the soul out of their body. And I think they could really use your genius. So I thank you again for coming on the podcast, for sharing how you are a great example of a true woman of value.
If you would like to step more fully into your value, grab a free copy of The Ultimate Guide to Becoming a Woman of Value on my website, thewomanofvalue.com. Just click the link at the top of the homepage. And if you haven't already done so, be sure to click the subscribe button in your listening app. And if there's something in this episode that inspired you, please share it with others, because the more we share these inspirational stories, the more women of value we will have in this world. I'll see you next time.